24 hours away from the game that everyone has been chattering about since last week on Sunday. Can you believe it, folks? We've hyped it up here throughout the week on the show. And now, just one day away, Michigan State, 3:30, national TV, the Big House, College Game Day. Wow. It's going to be a big game, folks, and throughout this hour, we will get you locked and loaded for you. And also on the show, we'll give you a preview of last night's Current Sports TV sit-down with Terry Kilday, director of Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. We'll have Reflection Friday for you. Also even discuss that juicy conversation concerning the feds looking into fantasy sports sites like FanDuel and DraftKings, all of that and so much more. Again, our phone lines are open. Just call 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527 to be a part of the show. But hey, you know how we start the show. Let's hit you with our current sports quick hit headliners for this Friday, October 16th. All right, folks, let's give you first an update on those who are heading out to Ann Arbor to enjoy that big rivalry matchup between the Spartans and Wolverines. Again, an afternoon kickoff, 3:30 p.m. The weather in Ann Arbor is on Saturday, is expected to be in the high 40s in the afternoon with winds around 10 miles per hour and cloudy skies. It'll be a chilly day for the game, but that in no way, shape, or form will dwindle the drama that comes with this rivalry.
I knew we were going to pop one. They had everybody up there. So.
Okay, moving on. While alums and students stood guard around Sparty all week, Michigan students vandalized another unguarded landmark on campus, of course, Tuesday. We talked about it throughout the entire show, basically, yesterday. The Magic Johnson statue outside of the Breslin Center was painted yellow with a block M written on Magic's chest. When asked about it at Michigan, at Big Ten Media Days, Tom Izzo, head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball team, said, quote, "There's a lot of great Michigan kids, and then there are some idiots." I love that quote. Gotta love that. Shots fired by Coach Izzo. All right, Michigan's junior men's basketball guard, Zach Irvin, had a back issue late this summer during an open gym session and underwent surgery to correct it on September 10th. Coach John Beilein hopes to have Irvin back sometime in November, in which, of course, the beginning of the season starts. All right, Johan Franzen of the Detroit Red Wings, who suffered a season-ending concussion in January, is feeling concussion symptoms yet again. Franzen made it through Red Wings preseason games in their first two regular season games before Coach Jeff Blashill, announced he will again be out indefinitely. The New York Mets, how about that game last night, huh? They beat the LA Dodgers 3-2 in Game 5 of the National League Division Series. Daniel Murphy, wow, all the crap that Daniel Murphy gets, he came up clutch and has been coming up clutch throughout the postseason for the Mets. He clinched the win for New York in LA with a solo home run in the sixth inning, the go-ahead homer. The Mets will now face the Chicago Cubs for the National League pennant. That is going to be one insane in the membrane matchup. All right, the Atlanta Falcons, they suffered their first loss of the season last night. Hey, Isaac, how about your Saints, my man? The New Orleans Buddha, Saints.
Baby.
Yeah, there you go, right? New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, they topped the Falcons last night in a really interesting game. Yeah, my whole pick'em got screwed up because I actually chose the Falcons to win that game. All right, sources reported Wednesday that Lamar Odom had squeezed Khloe Kardashian's hand, but doctors have since said it was an involuntary response. So small progress in this whole Lamar Odom situation. He still remains unresponsive, according to TMZ Sports. Doctors said that four organs, including his kidneys, are still failing. And last but not least, LeBron James. He received anti-inflammatory injections in his back earlier this week. The Cavaliers GM, David Griffin, said it could keep James out the rest of the preseason schedule. Now, the injection was mostly cautionary and to help take advantage of downtime before the regular season. All right, folks, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. and we'll read it live here on our airwaves. You can also even tweet us at Al Martin, WKAR, or you can also even tweet us at our official Twitter handle for the show. Current Sports WKAR, our official Twitter handle is at WKAR_sports. Again, at WKAR_sports. Follow us there. Tweet us there. Again, we want to get your thoughts on what is going to go down tomorrow afternoon at the Big House. The Spartans taking on the Wolverines. National pundits everywhere are choosing the Wolverines to win that matchup. Again, as I've been stating throughout the entire week, Michigan is a 6.5-point favorite. What do you think the score is going to be? And who knows? If you nail it, we may have something for you, folks. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show. Hey folks, well, yeah, everyone's talking about it again. If you want to give your thoughts and predictions on what is going to go down tomorrow, Saturday afternoon, call 517-355-9527. I'm just browsing around here. I'm actually on ESPN.com. I have Yahoo Sports up as well. And on at least those two avenues, they even have on their front page a picture of Jim Harbaugh and what he's done at the University of Michigan. I'm looking at the college football page on ESPN.com, and there's an article written by one of their columnists on how, quote, how Jim Harbaugh made Michigan so good so fast. Oh, boy. I'm going to bite my tongue a little bit here, but it just really amazes me how many people are just hopping on that Michigan bandwagon so far. And it's so early on in the year. It's so early on in the year, you don't want to overreact, but it's hard not to. It really is when looking at what Michigan has been able to do so far this season. Again, I mean, Michigan is coming off of three straight weeks in which they have shut out the opposition. That's hard to do no matter who your opponent is. I don't care who you're playing. You could be playing Pattengill Middle School. Three shutouts in a row is very, very impressive. I get it. I get it, folks. And on the contrary, when evaluating what Mark D'Antonio and the Spartans have done this year, again, they are 6-0. They are undefeated. They were number two in the nation. They fell, number four last week, and or 2 weeks ago, I should say. And then looking at what occurred out in Rutgers land, they fell to number seven in the nation. And granted, so, I mean, I get it. You know, it's all about how you look when evaluating who makes the college football playoff. But at the same time, looking at how the hype machine has turned all the way up on Michigan, I just don't believe that this team has seen a formidable test like Michigan State so far. And it really amazes me how national pundits everywhere, how many people out there evaluating this game already have Michigan, as a shoo-in, that they're going to win this game. Many people feel as though it's going to be close, but I even heard, like Adam Schein from Mad Dog Sports Radio on Sirius XM today, he predicted that Michigan will win by double digits. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's craziness. Craziness. And, looking at, the contrary storyline, we're looking at Michigan State. Again, Michigan State, have they looked like a dominant powerhouse? Have they looked like what they previously did, when looking at that number two ranking from the Associated Press poll? No, they haven't. They've struggled to close out games. They struggle in the last quarter, in the fourth quarter, having to squeak out matchups against teams like Purdue, against teams like Rutgers, even going, to the beginning of the year when they played Western Michigan, how they let them back in that game, and Western made it a 10-point game at one point as that game went on. I mean, I get it. Michigan State has not looked like this dominant force. But at the same time, haven't people learned that you don't count out Mark D'Antonio in the Michigan State football program? And again, Michigan State is soaking this up, folks. They are certainly soaking this up. They would rather be the underdog in this matchup. Now, for me, again, we've been taking your calls and thoughts and you giving your predictions on what you think is going to go down on Saturday. I believe, and I've said this on Monday, I think Michigan State is going to pull out this game. I really think they are. I mean, when looking at the offense, they have the more experienced quarterback. Connor Cook has played in multiple big games. He's won a Rose Bowl. He's won a Cotton Bowl. He has now become the all-time winningest quarterback in Michigan State football history. Looking at, you know, when he has been faced with adversity, he has responded. I really thought that fourth quarter for Connor Cook against Rutgers was very impressive. Very impressive. When he needed to make plays, when his team, when you know, was faced with, again, adversity, that A word, he came through. He came through and delivered big passes and big moments to propel Michigan State to victory. On the contrary, from Michigan, Jake Rudock, I'm not sold on him as an all-star quarterback for the Maize and Blue. The offense has looked shaky at times for the Wolverines. I mean, it's hard to ignore. Hard to ignore. The defense, let's be real here, the defense has been carrying Michigan throughout this incredible run to start this season. Again, back-to-back-to-back shutouts against teams like, you know what, Northwestern, which had been steamrolling up until they faced Jim Harbaugh's team. BYU, they were ranked at the time when Michigan shut out them. They've beaten a team like, you know, they just had some very good wins. Some very good wins. And it's hard to ignore that. But at the same time, Coach D'Antonio has proven that this, again, six of the last seven meetings, folks. Six of the last seven meetings, Mark D'Antonio has beaten Michigan, with the last one occurring back in 2012, in which it took a last-minute field goal for Brady Hoke's team to beat MSU. But other than that, Mark D'Antonio has completely owned Michigan. So I'm going with Michigan State in this game, and I'm going to say it's going to be a 21-17 type of a result. That's my prediction. Again, I want to get yours, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
Doing well, Al. Can't wait to head down to Ann Arbor for this weekend. Like I said before, going to the Big House is really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's the mecca for college football, and I can't wait to cover it. Also, we picked the right year, too, because this is going to be one fantastic game, I think. Both teams are highly ranked, and both teams have a lot to play for, so I can't wait to see these two battle it out.
I want to get your early prediction. Who do you think is going to win and why?
My prediction is Michigan State 17-14, and the reason why is, you look at the history of college football recently, there are some teams that just grind it out. They look as impressive against Rutgers as they do against teams like Oregon or Alabama. And I'm thinking of teams that did this when I think LSU a few years back. I think the Florida teams sometimes with Tim Tebow. They didn't win easy, but they won. And that's all you have to do. And I wonder if MSU is in those ranks, because no, MSU hasn't looked good whatsoever, but even so, they've really won every single game. None of them are flukes that they won. They deserve
for Michigan
to win
State?
Every game.
For Michigan State?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean by fluke?
I'm saying in every single game, I think that they were the better team. I don't think there was a blown call at the end of the game where you say they were lucky to get out of that one. In fact, I think that Michigan State in every single game, you could have made a debate that they were the better team and the score didn't reflect their dominance throughout most of the game.
I don't know. I may take the opposite take with you on that, because I think that Michigan State has certainly let their foot off the gas when they've had a lead throughout the game. You know, again, going back to that Purdue game, I mean, Isaac, they had like a 21-0 lead. And then all of a sudden in the second half, they look like an entirely different team. Now, granted, you know, not to, you know, put an excuse for Mark D'Antonio and his squad, but they have had injuries, and they have had injuries at key spots, especially when it comes to that defense. And there are question marks coming into this game against Michigan, guys like Jack Allen and Jack Conklin. You know, even before the season started, I mean, Ed Davis goes out with a knee injury. We've seen injuries to key players. Madre London, I mean, he's questionable. I don't even know if he's going to play this weekend. So now L.J. Scott and Delton Williams' redshirt went out the window against Rutgers. So there have been injuries that have also been a factor as to why Michigan State maybe has let teams in late in the game. But at the same time, for Michigan State, they have yet to just have that convincing win that you know, had a perception of dominance.
Oh,
that said, okay, this is why Mark D'Antonio's squad is among the elite. So when you look at it, again, I agree with you. I mean, you know, Michigan State, yeah, they've been favored to win every game they played, maybe with the exception of the Oregon game so far this year. But they've let teams in games and opened the door for possible upsets, and we could have saw it last week against Rutgers.
Yes, we could have, but I'm saying Michigan State didn't win those games because of favorable refereeing. They didn't
win. Okay, so you're hopping on the officiating then?
Exactly. They didn't win because of that. They didn't win because, wow, well, you know,
by some luck of the imagination.
Exactly,
that's what you mean.
Some miracle. They won because they were the better team in most of those games. I'm not saying they were impressive. They were anything but impressive. They were totally lackluster, and they made their opponents look stellar in some of those games. Central Michigan, Western Michigan, Air Force, Purdue, Rutgers. None of those games should have been close. All of them were. All of them went to the fourth quarter. But Michigan State won all of those games. And I wonder if this is just one of those teams that grinds it out. They never impress you, but then you look back on the season and think, wow, that's a good record, and they've beat some quality teams. And I think that could be a team like Michigan State.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm very interested to see the matchup between Michigan State's offense, which has the potential to really put up big numbers against any opposition on any given Saturday. But they are playing statistically the best defense in the nation, in Michigan's defense. That's going to be a very fun matchup to watch, quite honestly, because we all know that Connor Cook's record is unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, again, the all-time winningest QB in Michigan State history. He's got a great arm on him. His accuracy is fantastic at times when it comes to challenging those the secondary of any opposition. But Michigan, again, they haven't allowed any score, a field goal, not even a touchdown, not let alone a field goal, throughout the past three weeks. So Connor Cook and the way he plays is going to be a big determinant on whether or not the Spartans can pull out this W. Point blank, period. And again, you can also bring up the case as to whether or not that Michigan defense, which has, you know, shut out, you know, teams 3 weeks in a row, if it's faced an offense quite like Michigan State's, that's also a thing to look at. When you look at, you know, BYU and Northwestern and teams like that, who else did they play? What, Maryland was the other team
Maryland.
As well? You have to look at those squads. When you they really don't compare to Michigan State in my mind as to what the Spartans can do from an arsenal attack in many different ways. So I think that it's all fine and dandy. Michigan State's defense has had three shutouts, but at the same time, they have not played an offense so dynamic, very dynamic like Michigan State's. And I think that's something I'm going to be watching this Saturday as well, Isaac.
And I agree with you 100%, Al. I think Northwestern, they've got a decent passing game. They do, and they were a good team. But the problem is Northwestern does not have that pro-style quarterback, which I think Michigan hasn't played all year. The only time they've given up more than 150 yards through the air is against Utah, the first week of the season. And Utah's got a good quarterback in Travis Wilson, but he's also not a pro-style quarterback. I think Connor Cook could exploit some holes in that secondary. I'm not talking about Peppers. I'm not talking about other stars on that team. But I think depth-wise, there are some concerns for the Wolverines. So I think when the Spartans spread it out, we've seen that they have the offensive weapons. We've seen the alternatives really step up in certain games, the substitutes. We've seen McGarrett Kings have big games. We've seen De'Anthony Arnett have big games. A.J. Troop. It's not just Aaron Burbridge. And therefore, I think there's some space to exploit in that secondary. Now, I think running-wise, it'll be tough to get past that Michigan front seven. If anybody can do it, it's LJ Scott.
Especially with the battered offensive line that Michigan State is expected to have tomorrow.
And exactly.
And again, we don't really know the full extent of the injuries to guys like Jack Allen and Jack Conklin. But at the same time, it has been very alarming. It certainly has been very alarming when, you know, the past few weeks we've seen multiple Spartans go down in disarray. I mean, it's been disheartening for Spartan fans out there to watch that. So I think when comparing the offensive line of Michigan State to the defensive line of Michigan, I think the defensive line of Michigan has an advantage there. And it is going to be tough for LJ Scott and Delton Williams, you know, to get those carries and to really make something happen out of that backfield. Now, On the contrary, for Michigan's offense, Jake Rudock, Alex, I mean Isaac, I'm not sold. I'm not sold on what he does. Because Jake Rudock, to me, I think he's an average quarterback, just an average guy. We have not seen him put up big numbers. We have not seen accuracy in long balls down the field. I mentioned yesterday how his longest throw this year has been for 44 yards.
That's 42, I think.
I saw 44 on ESPN.com. 44, that's it. 40-plus yards has been his longest throw the entire season. That secondary, if you're going to beat Michigan State, you have to be able to exploit Michigan State's chink in the armor. And we all know what the chicken or armor for Michigan State is this year. It's that defensive secondary. They've had multiple injuries coming into the year, starting with Ed Davis. Then Vyonte Copeland goes out. We've seen linebackers like Darian Harris and so on and so forth. Monte Nicholson, miss open tackles in open field areas. They've not been great when it comes to coverage, and they've given up big plays every single week we've seen them. And not to mention the ground game. Let's not forget that Air Force, I think, ran like, 400-plus yards on Michigan State. That is not a typical Michigan State defense. You have to exploit that, and I'm not sold that Michigan's offense can do that.
Yeah, I think running-wise, Michigan should have some success. Now, it's imperative that they do have that success, because if Davion Smith and Ty Isaac can't find those holes, can't make Michigan State's safeties come up and help out the line, then Jake Rudock's in for a long day, because then he does have to rely on his arm. He doesn't have to rely on his receivers. He'll have to rely on himself to make those precision throws, which he really hasn't proven he can do just yet. His completion percentage is just fine, but the majority of those passes that he throws are under routes, under the defense. They're not these testing throws that really take a lot of accuracy, precision, and really an elite quarterback to make. They're easier. So
right.
If Michigan State can hold up that running game, then Jake Rudock's in for a long day, because then he'll have to make the plays with his arm, which, like I said, he hasn't had to do that all season. And now that Michigan State's got a better scouting report on Michigan's offense, I think that does give some leeway for the Spartans in terms of the amounts of blitzes that they can throw at Michigan to try to shake it up.
And speaking of blitzes, this is a stat I want to bring up before we hit our first break here. Something to watch, I'm just saying, because, again, the offensive line for Michigan State is battered, and it's questionable coming into this game. The reason why Michigan has been so good this year defensively, when it comes to third downs, Michigan State isn't giving you a first down, folks. They actually lead the nation. They lead the nation when it comes to stops on third downs, and they blitz on third downs 40% of the time. Connor Cook is going to have his head on a swivel on those third downs, and he's going to have to make sure that, and especially from a play-calling standpoint, they're going to have to make sure that they mix it up. They cannot be predictable on those third and opportunities. Because Michigan has been the best in the nation at not allowing you jack in those moments.
Well, and I think the strength for Michigan is the middle of that defense. So if Michigan State wants to beat those blitzes, they'll have to get it out of Cook's hands and get it out in a hurry. And that means for me a lot of swing routes to LJ Scott or Gerald Holmes, the running backs coming out of the backfield, because you want to run away from Peppers and that intimidating front seven. You want to run more towards the cornerbacks where you've got some decent receivers on the outside who can block. Yeah. We've seen Burbridge throw some nice ones throughout the season. And I think if Michigan State can get outside, get that edge, then they've got the advantage. But I think if Michigan can get pressure so quickly, like you said, Cook's going to have to make some smart decisions. Because if the Big House gets rocking as well because of an early turnover, then the Spartans might be in for a long day.
What do you guys think? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, we are taking your calls, thoughts, predictions on the big game. Spartans versus Wolverines. As we continue on this hour, we have just some special things coming for you. One, which I kind of lay out the bat because
foreshadowing.
I foreshadowed because, when I first got hired here at WKAR, before you became our engineer, Isaac, we had an individual who held it down, who did one outstanding job even before I was even an employee here at WKAR. And folks, he is in the house. I made a mistake and called Isaac by that name because I see him there behind the glass. But he is in the house right now. Later on in the hour, we're going to have him on the show to give his thoughts and predictions on what he thinks is going to happen in the big game. You do not want to miss that. We're also going to give you a preview of last night's current sports TV sit-down with Terry Kilday, the director of Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. All of that and so much more. Let's hit the break. You are tuned in to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
It is the day the Michigan fans have waited years for. Jim Harbaugh coming home and has become the university's 20th head football coach.
With Harbaugh being at Michigan now, it makes the Big Ten whole again.
Jim Harbaugh is the best football coach in college football.
Michigan's a heavyweight. Ohio State's a heavyweight. It feels like the Big Ten is on the come.
I love him. I love Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh's first season as head coach.
Harbaugh is the magical name.
I'm a Harbaugh fan.
I'm a huge Harbaugh fan.
Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
ESPN invites coaches throughout the season and the preseason to come out and visit. Problem is, ESPN had a tough time pronouncing and writing Mark D'Antonio's name all day. When it came down to it, Mark did appear on many shows throughout the afternoon and used the platform to talk about the respect Michigan State deserves.
We've won our last four bowl games. We've beaten Georgia. We've beaten TCU. We've beaten Stanford. We've beaten Baylor. So we're pretty healthy in that regard in terms of competing against good football teams.
The way Harbaugh acts on the sidelines with the officials and everybody, he is... I don't think he's doing himself any good with that personality.
Well, Dan and Ama, the Niners today said they want their next head coach to represent the team with class and to be a great teacher. Now, was that a slam against Jim Harbaugh or in simply a new direction going forward? We may never know the real reason why they parted company.
Think about the Lion King. Simba gets hit over the head and he tells him, yeah, the past can hurt. You can either can run from it or you can learn from it. Who said that? Fiki? Rafiki. Wise words.
Rolling Stone recently did an article, the top two coaches in the Big Ten, they said Urban Meyer and Harbaugh, he's not, you know, hasn't even coached a game in the conference yet. Does that motivate you at all?
No, I'm just a guy trying to move forward, so I'm good with that.
How do you see that rivalry shaping out now that he's there?
You know, we'll line up and play.
If that doesn't get you jacked up for tomorrow night's for tomorrow afternoon's game, I don't know what will, folks. Wow, yeah. Mark D'Antonio and Jim Harbaugh. An interesting dynamic because, you know, when you see Coach D, he's always so even-keeled. You know, he's just so cool, calm, collected. You know, you don't see too much emotion from him at times, even though he's a very funny guy, very witty guy, as I've gotten to know him over the years. And you know, hey, he just wants to win, point blank, period. You know, he's not gonna, you know, do a lot of trash talking, only when it allows for that, if somebody bites back at him. And you know, when looking at, you know, the Harbaugh mania, as you just heard in that montage, I mean, everyone is so high on Jim Harbaugh. And again, we're only approaching week 7 of the college football year. Oh, it's so crazy. And again, you know, what really stood out to me in that montage is when, of course, ESPN, you know, when they invite Coach D'Antonio for their, you know, annual car wash. That's what they call it when they have a coach in and he does like multiple shows throughout the entire day. And when they had D'Antonio on, after the, of course, the announcement of Jim Harbaugh being the head coach of the University of Michigan's football team was announced, and he goes on these various shows. Again, as you heard Brad Galley of Channel 7 there, as he talked about how Mark D'Antonio, his name was misspelled during the lower third of multiple shows. They actually called him Mike D'Antoni, who is the head coach in the NBA, formerly with the Phoenix Suns, I believe. He got his name completely wrong, and every single show that D'Antonio was a guest spot on, he was asked about Jim Harbaugh and what his hiring means to the conference of the Big Ten and what it means to the overall rivalry between Michigan State and Michigan. He was rarely asked about the personnel on his squad entering this season, how they have multiple pieces coming back. He was rarely asked about guys like Connor Cook and Shalik Calhoun and so on and so forth. But now it all comes to a culmination here on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. But Michigan State wins. Wow. I wonder what the dialogue is going to look like on national pundit spots like ESPN and Fox Sports, because I tell you what, there will be many disappointed fans out there. I will say that. All right, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's get away from the whole rivalry talk for a second, and we want to give you guys a recap of what took place last night on WKAR-TV as I got the chance to sit down with Terry Kilday, who is the director of Hawk Hollow Golf Properties. Now, Terry has been involved as the director of marketing for Hawk Hollow Golf Properties since the early 2000s. And he really enjoys it and really does one fabulous job. And, of course, with the President's Cup ending last week, the U.S. of A. pulling out the victory, I wanted to have Terry on to talk about the dynamic of golf right here in America, because it's no secret that golf over the years, from a popularity standpoint, has been taking a hit. So I got a chance to chat with Terry about it, and of course I had to lead our conversation by asking him his thoughts and predictions on the big game. Here we go.
Well, I'm going with my Spartans. 21-17 would be my number.
21-17 is kind of a house divided in the Kilday family, right? Because you do have a daughter that went to Michigan, right?
Oh, yes. Her and her husband, his family. And so I have four grandsons, and I've got two of them that are heavily Spartan, and two of them are Wolverines and stuff. And so we have our own in-house rivalry, as you say.
It gets ugly, doesn't it?
A little bit every now and then.
You know. All right, sir. Well, let's talk some golf. I'm excited to dive into the different layers to this conversation, more so concerning the popularity of the sport. But before we do move on, it is October right now. It's mid-October, and I'm curious to know, with the weather changing, What do you guys see at your golf properties with Hawk Hollow? Are people still playing? Have the numbers gone down a bit? And when is that usual cutoff period every single year for guys just to say, all right, it's done, the weather's too bad?
Well, when frost starts to hit heavy and it goes into noon before we can let golfers on, I guess is the answer to that. Right now, we've had such a great September, and with darn few exceptions, a really good October. We were sold out Friday, Saturday, Sunday of last week. It does settle down Monday through Thursday, and people have got responsibilities with kids in school, but they find a way to get to our golf courses on the weekends.
Certainly, and Terry, you have an interesting story when it comes to your background within the sport, because it wasn't until 2001 that you actually dove into this area of marketing for Hawk Hollow and said, okay, this is what I wanted to do. First off, when did you start playing golf, and how did it end up, how did your journey end up right here with Hawk Hollow?
Well, part of the deal with getting married is my father-in-law was an avid golfer, and that's really when I started, so about the age of 21. But in the greater Lansing area, we ran gas stations and car washes, we being my brother and I and our families. So when it came time for my wife and I to sell, we had 10 locations around town. His sons were still involved in the business, so we sold to them. And the family that owns Hawk Hollow, Eagle Eye, Woodside, and our family of golf courses, that man's primary business is commercial construction. Mm-hmm. So he had built my golf courses, my gas stations and stuff. So it was kind of natural for me to to wind out there when, because I was fairly young when we sold the business, and I wasn't going to be able to stay home and, you know, read the newspaper or something. So got out and fed my addiction here a little bit on the golf course.
And it's quite the addiction. I'm a golf head myself. Now, on to the popularity of the sport. I want to throw out a few statistics for you here, Terry. Now, according to Golf Digest, the number of players ages 18 to 30 years old has declined by 35% over the last decade. Golf club and clothes sales are down 30% last year alone. More golf courses closed than open right here in America for the eighth straight year here in 2015. I want to start open-ended here and ask simply why.
Well, I think there's two major things. Number one, it's the time factor. Golf, if you play a full 18 holes and travel from home and travel back home, you're very fortunate if you can do it in 5.5 hours or less. So today's world, we don't have that much time very often, so that you don't have the 3 or 4 times a week player. You have that player only playing once a week. The young people, and I look at it with my grandson, I even look at it with my son and daughter, who both love golf. It's more instant gratification, and golf kind of pulls it out of you. It isn't a snap, you know, and stuff. And you have to work hard at it to really be good at it, but you can still have fun with it, you know, but you can't do it quickly, you know, like firing up a video game or something like that.
Right, and even other sports, to compare it to other sports like a basketball, for instance, where, you know, there's multiple opportunities to score. I mean, golf can be a very, very frustrating game, which is why I love it. I'm weird. I like that challenge, but for the majority of, that population, 18 to 30 years old, it can be a challenge. Terry, when you hear these numbers, does it scare you at all, being in the business that you are in?
Well, our whole industry, I think, takes it very serious, and I don't know if scare is the right word, but it sure makes somebody that is involved with marketing of golf courses like myself, you have to sit and say, hey, how do we maximize the use of our properties, and how do we bring new people into it, and how do we get the pool of people that are there right now to play a little more often, and for sure come to our courses rather than wander elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's certainly a challenge, to say the least. Now, I want to talk about the marketing strategies that you guys at Hawk Hollow Golf Properties use to try and attract that younger demographic. What have you guys done? Now, something that really stood out to me from various reports nationally is this thing called Top Golf, and you and I chatted briefly about it before we took the air here, Terry. Top Golf is basically like a bowling alley, but for golf. I mean, everybody's got their own little lane. I know there's one in Chicago right now. Everybody's got their own little lane. You can have a group of friends. You can go get a beverage or two. You can sit back on the couch while you stare at this huge open field lit up with neon lights, and you can practice your driving skills or your chipping skills, whatever, what have you. Very cool stuff. What other initiatives are you guys doing to try and attract that young demographic?
We've done a variety of things. We entertain big hole contests where the hole, instead of being 4.5 inches, it's 8 inches. Makes a youngster be able to make a few putts and stuff. We try and run a few of those through the season. Again, get them on the golf course, see how much fun you can have, you know, wildlife, sand, bunkers, lakes, and everything else. So we expose them to it. The other thing that we're working real hard on, and it's been a very, very big success for us, is foot golf, which combines soccer with the rules of golf. And we're very fortunate. We've got 4 different properties, and we have 1 9-hole course that lends itself very easily to foot golf, from the length involved, from the ability that your foursome can play foot golf, my foursome right behind you can play regular golf, and we don't interfere with each other and stuff. So foot golf is, it's not just a fad. I mean, it's big. It started in California, and you've seen just in the last year here in Michigan, 8 more courses have come on with it. So again, anything that you can do to get a youngster out and see, you know, how much fun you can have outdoors, being active, and doing it on a golf course.
Now, sticking on foot golf, the conversation of foot golf, which one of your golf properties has enacted that? Is it the Falcon, you told me?
It is the Falcon, yes.
And when it comes to foot golf, I mean, so you're out there and you're just kicking a ball,
and you got you treat each kick as a stroke, right? And at the end of the hole, is how big is the hole? I mean, how does that work?
Al, if you can picture, if you're playing the hole, and off to your right would be the traditional green. Off maybe 45 degrees to your left, we mow an area. It's short to kind of be like a green, but the hole there is 21 inches in diameter.
21 inches.
There's an actual hole cutter that that we make. There's a separate flag in there, and that's where you're playing to. And 21 inches, you'd think, man, I can get a soccer ball in there from 30 feet every time. It likes to rim out. It's a lot bigger. Just like picture a basketball, you know how they'll rim out there. You get that same kind of thing. So it's challenging, it's fun, and it's great exercise.
And I believe you said over 50% of your bookings at the Falcon have been foot golf outings?
Right. We introduced it August of last year, and it's just taken off. We're very fortunate. We're lucky to MSU. East Lansing in general has a great soccer population, soccer programs at Okemos, Mason, East Lansing. And so, you know, we're real convenient. We're 2 miles down the road from MSU, and we get a lot of play.
Now, Terry, there are a ton of golf purists out there that would argue with you and say that introducing these new tidbits to the game to try and attract the younger audience and bring in new revenue for the sport of golf may hurt the purity of the game. What's your response to that argument? And do you agree with them?
And no, I don't agree with them, because there's no purity to the game if all the golf courses go away.
Right.
So you have to utilize the facilities that are there. Al, you've played Eagle Eye, you've played Hawk Hollow. We would never dream of a foot golf on those facilities. They're upscale golf courses. They're groomed, and we do want the serious golfer or even the non-serious golfer that wants a real unique experience once or twice a year, we want them to have a pure golf course for that. But we don't want to, on our other two courses, you know, shake our heads and say, no, it's our way or the highway. We want to find out what turns on this generation of golfers. And you said 18 to 30. I'm even more concerned with the 5-year-olds through the 12-year-olds.
Right.
You know, get them hooked. You know, wanting to come out, you know, get away from, you know, the all the time with the TV or the devices, and just get out there and enjoy sunshine and the thrill of competition on a golf course.
Can't beat it. Can't beat it. Now, on the flip side of this, and this really kind of blew my mind when I was prepping for our sit down here, Terry, because I had no idea that there were courses out there that are all male courses. Actually, Augusta National, where they hold the Masters, that course ended its 80-year all-male membership by inviting former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and South Carolina financier Darla Moore back in 2012 to the course. Why do all male clubs exist? That seems kind of crazy when you look at the numbers and how the numbers don't bode in favor of popularity for the game itself. So why have an entire demographic excluded in certain clubs?
Well, it's a mystery to me. Number one, in the world we live in today, it just doesn't seem like it could possibly be. But we've got Butler National as close as Chicago, Al, that they still exist. You know, they've said to, it's a great golf course. And they've said, you know, we won't hold national tournaments because you've told us we can't and stuff. It's segregation that just does not need to happen anymore. You know, we want it to be a welcoming sport. And these handful of clubs across the country are going in the other direction, telling half the population, hey, go away.
Craziness. I just don't get it. That blows my mind. What are the numbers when it comes to females who play the game of golf? I mean, if you can give us kind of a guesstimate. And what do they look like at you know, Eagle Eye properties, or, you know, just your properties that you have?
Well, if you went right from Eagle Eye being our premier course, I'd say about 15% of our play there is female. And again, they have a little bit of perception that maybe this isn't for me, it's too tough, until they get there one time and see that it's such a woman-friendly course. Hawk Hollow goes up almost to 30%. Woodside and Falcon are 50% female players, you know, and stuff. And I see Hawk growing all the time. Every time we have an outing there, I hear so many great comments, and they say, hey, I can play this golf course.
Yeah, certainly. All right, before we move on to the 12th man here, Terry, briefly, I want you to hit on the Tiger effect. When Tiger Woods was in his heyday, you know, when he bursted on the scene in the mid-90s leading up to the early 2000s, there was nothing like it. I mean, I don't know if I would be playing golf if it wasn't for Tiger Woods. He was my favorite athlete. Loved him. That did a lot when it comes to helping the game of golf. Do you see that trend ever coming back with young golfers like Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth? Do you think that we will ever see that again?
I definitely do think it'll be again. I don't know that Spieth, and I love him, he's a great golfer. He's going to win a ton. I don't know if he's the guy for that like Tiger was. But, you know, going back to my generation, you had Hogan before me that I didn't really know, but Palmer came right on the scene. There was a Nicklaus. We had the gap after Nicklaus and stuff. And then all of a sudden Woods exploded on it. I think we'd be naive not to say that there isn't somebody out there right now that's 3, 4, 5 years old that's banging away every day in the yard because he's just addicted to it, that isn't going to have those God-given skills, the right personality, and I firmly believe we'll see another explosion again. It's just a natural, but you need somebody that can move the needle across all demographics, and that's what Tiger did. You know, you loved him or you hated him, but you watched him.
And I certainly loved him. Only time will tell, right, Terry?
Well, that's right.
Again, folks, you can catch the visual of last night's current sports TV episode in my chat with Terry Kilday, the full chat, because after that question, we went into the 12th man, as Terry talked about his thoughts on the President's Cup, as well as that odd call, that odd officiating call during the President's Cup concerning Phil Mickelson. Of course, the U.S. pulled out the dub, a very close win during the President's Cup, a 15.5 to 14.5 W. So very interesting stuff. You want to catch the visual of that, all you got to do is simply go to video.wkar.org. Again, video.wkar.org to watch that episode as well as any episode in current sports TV history. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we have a little over 10 minutes left in the show. Again, we will get you prepped, our final prep for the MSU and Michigan game again tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Call in 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. I'm your host, Al Martin, and you are listening to Current Sports. We have just about 10 minutes left in the show. 10 minutes left in the show. Again, we are asking you all to call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to one of our favorite callers right now. He is on line one, and it's always a special call. Anytime he weighs in on anything on the show, we've got Ray from Indiana on line one. My man, Ray, how you doing, brother?
Hey, this is for the jackpot, Skipper.
Marble
Skipper.
Yeah. Michigan and Michigan State, Ray. Are you pumped up for it?
Well, I won't be able to watch one play. We'll be downtown doing things about the Lord, talking from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., but when I get home about 7:30, I'm going to be praying to God you guys beat those bullies and those liars up north.
So you won't be able to see the game, Ray?
No, I won't be able to watch the play.
All the hype that you have been...
The Lord's more important, my friend.
I hear you. I can't argue with that, man.
But I still will be praying you guys play great all day and win.
Well,
did you pass that on to coaches? You got to use their over aggressiveness against them.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure Coach D hasn't handled Ray.
Are you there?
Yeah, I mean
those double reverses, screen passes, the tailback out of the backfield, and you got to spread them out a little bit so when they're over aggressive, you can get some big plays down the field.
That's right. Yeah, Ray, you gave a full synopsis and a full analysis of it earlier this week. And again, like you said, I mean, when you talk about Michigan's offense, they thrive on those small dump-off passes, those handoffs to Davion Smith. I mean, that's what they do offensively. Michigan State are going to have to step up, especially when it comes to their defensive line, Ray.
Well, they're giving that ball to the fullback a lot, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they're not, right. They're giving it to the tailback. But, you know, they haven't turned the ball over since they played Utah. You've got to force their weakness is that quarterback. You've got to expose him for what he is.
You got to bring him out,
stop the running attack, and force him to make some long throws down the field, not those little short dinky passes that they've been beating everybody on all week.
Yeah, that's what they thrive off. And I really do believe, though, I think Jake Rudock has gotten better he's gotten better week by week by week, I think, Ray.
He has. Really, to be honest with him, I agree. Harbaugh's did a heck of a job with him. He's rolled him out left or right, and he throws that little dink pass 8 to 10 yards to the tight end all day long.
Yep, and no one can stop it.
I know. If you can start guarding that tight end, stop him, and force him to throw a 20 to 30-yard pass, now you're talking.
Now you're talking, Ray. There you go. Well, appreciate the call, Ray.
Those Spartans beat those boys up north and those liars.
There we go. The one, the only, Ray from Indiana. Appreciate it, Ray. I tell you what, you better buckle up anytime Ray calls this program, because you never know what you're going to get, Isaac. I tell you, man.
Yeah, Al, one of the other things I encourage people to tune into is the music that Ray has on the background. I've always noticed that. I don't know what it is. What type do you think it is?
That's, you know what, I've always wondered that too. Whenever Ray is going on one of his long rants, I always wonder what's that playing in the background as well. I don't know. Maybe some Luther Vandross or something like that. I have no idea. It's slow and mellow, though. I will say
that. I think he might use it intentionally to make his speech more climatic.
Right.
You know,
right.
No, it makes sense.
I hear you. Okay. All right, let's move on now. Let's hit our last segment of the show. We love to call it, we dub it Reflection Friday, where we take a look at the week that was here on WKAR's Current Sports and recap some of our favorite moments, some of our favorite interviews, some of our favorite stories that we have gotten to, and maybe some that we haven't even gotten to yet. So here we go, Reflection Friday. All right, it is now time for Reflection Friday. And you know what? I'm even going to go further than just this week, Isaac, because right now in the house, we have a man who held it down before you got here, actually. He was the man behind the glass here on WKAR's Current Sports. And even before, the show was entitled Current Sports, even back during the sports talk days with the legendary, the famed Earl Robinson. He made a surprise appearance this morning and is sitting in to close out today's show. You guys know who I'm talking about. Alex Sharg is sitting to my left. Alex, how you doing?
Great, Al. You know, it's great to be back. I'm glad to be back here in East Lansing. And hey, amidst this rivalry week, I was talking to the students behind the glass here. I said, after the painting over the Magic Johnson statue, has there been any has it been a crazy scene around here? Are people off with the heads? Are they upper arming the Michigan fans?
Right.
And it's been a very kind of
chill, mellow
thing. I mean, I've never seen a rivalry week like this. Honestly.
Yeah. So you're just shocked that it's more so laid
it
back.
It is.
Then, huh?
I think just state fans are used to winning. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Well, 6 of the last 7 years, you can't argue with that. But Alex, I gotta get your thoughts. Again, you've been doing some outstanding things since you've left WKAR.
Oh, thank
you're
you.
You're doing some work with Fox Sports Detroit. I know
yes.
You covered a lot of Detroit Tigers games, covering a lot of press conferences, talking to different players and personnel for the teams in Detroit. How's that been for you, man?
It's been really fun. I've been doing it part-time, but a lifetime worth of experiences. Like, going into the locker rooms, talking with some of the players, it's been great. I work directly with the reporters doing the pregame and the postgame, and just covering the professional Detroit teams and seeing what goes on other than what maybe you read in a newspaper or what you watch on a basic television interview. It's been eye-opening.
Yeah, it certainly has. All right, well, give me a thought and prediction on what you think is going to go down tomorrow afternoon,
you know,
man.
What? I've listened to some of the discussion that you and Isaac had earlier, and I think Michigan State's going to win. The pro-style offense, I think, is what's going to matter. And mainly, the bigger thing is that Michigan really hasn't faced, in my eyes, too much of a tough task yet.
Sure, with the exception of Utah, right.
Sure, they played Utah, and they lost a close game there. But Northwestern, Maryland, some of these teams they've played, sure, they've came in with some really good records, maybe some really good performances themselves, but the offenses have been dismal. the offenses when they've played Michigan have not been great. And not to, no knock on Michigan's defense, but the other teams have just not shown up. And maybe you do have to give Michigan credit, but you know this Michigan State offense is what really is a firepower for their team.
Yeah,
so you bet they're going to put some points on the board Saturday.
I think Michigan's offense is what hasn't lived up to par for this team. The defense has certainly carried those W's, especially looking at the last 3 weeks. So, and again, you got to give credit to Jim Harbaugh, though. I mean, it's hard to shut out any team. I mean, to have a shutout, to not allow a team to score any points throughout a game, let alone three games, impressive stuff. Hey, but you're going with Michigan State.
Credit to DJ Durkin, too, the defense coordinator. I mean, he's done a tremendous job.
I love Jabril Peppers, too. I got to say, Jabril Peppers is off the chain. Yeah. He's unbelievable. So give me a score.
I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, kind of rough and tough. I'm looking at, I think it's going to be about 21-17.
21-17. That's what I predicted. That's the exact score I predicted. All right, 21-17, Michigan State. All right, Ethan Merrill, he is one of our outstanding production assistants here on the show, who is, of course, working with that journalism 418 squad that's always in day in and day out here on Current Sports Radio. Ethan, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing good.
Go ahead. Who you got? I'm curious to see who you got. And you're a student here at MSU, so you do got a little bit of bias, but go ahead.
Yeah, a little bias, but I think it's going to be a hard-fought game, close. Coach D'Antonio, though, he's going to have the boys ready. He's going to roll into the Big House, get his 100th career victory, 24-21 Michigan State.
24-21 Michigan State. Okay. Isaac, did you already get yours, didn't you?
Yeah, already gave mine. 17-14 MSU. None of us ventured further than to say a four-point game either way.
Right.
So you know this one's going to be tight. It's going to be a nail-biter.
It's going to be close.
It
will. Very, very close. And I must say, if Michigan State plays the way they've played the last, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, they will lose. They will lose to Michigan.
Without doubt.
So they're going to have to up their game. If they can't walk in and play the same game they had against Rutgers.
But hey, Al, here's the thing. Great teams, Ohio State, Florida State, when they've been number one,
they get up for them.
Great teams lose close games. So just because that Michigan State has been losing some close games, it doesn't knock on what they can do in a very big game. Look at what Connor Cook's done in big
games. He's performed in big games. So, and whoever does lose this Saturday, I think you can throw out the implications for the football playoff.
That's why
this game is so big. That's why. Whoever wins automatically gets thrust into that conversation. All right, 2 minutes left in the show. Isaac, what's been your favorite moment of the week?
Al, the Saints coming back was great, but I'm not going to go with that, actually. I'm going to go and take the unbiased sportscaster side of me, and I'm going to say Michigan State students today, we didn't touch on this, they actually painted the Wolverine statue in Ann Arbor.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. So now
it
really is an equal-sided rivalry. And you and I were talking about it yesterday. Yes, it's unfortunate when vandalism happens. Do not encourage it. But it happens from both sides, and it does add to the rivalry. Even though that's not the way to do it, it does happen from both sides. So Michigan, hey, you did it first, but we got you back. So it's one of these things where I'm not encouraging it, but I'm saying it happens from both sides. So fair play to Michigan, I guess.
Okay, I hear you. I did not know that. Did that happen like last night or something like that?
I got an alert on my phone about an hour and a half ago, Al.
Okay, all right. For me, it's an unfortunate one, but really hoping that Lamar Odom pulls through.
Prayers for him.
Yeah, that is a very, very unfortunate situation, but much love to Lamar Odom. I really hope he comes out and beats this heinous situation that he is in. All right, folks, we are out of time, but I want to give a special shout-out to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Keep it locked to WKAR.org tomorrow evening for post-game coverage. Be easy, people.